In order to get the corn, the beans, and the squash that I wanted to show the kids a little earlier in the service today, all I had to do was take a quick trip to Hy-Vee and buy them. And of course, all three are completely not in season right now. So I was a little unsure if I would in fact be able to find them, but there they were. The three sisters on sale in three separate bins, no doubt brought in on three different trucks from three different parts of the country. How far the average American's experience of consuming produce has come from the indigenous model of companion planting, such as the Three Sisters Garden. In the last century, Western farming has gotten bigger and bigger, the process further and further from the consumer. We now mass produce our vegetables on commercial farms in America, each plant grown separately in tight rows, supported by chemical fertilizers. It's easy to eat foods out of season now. It's possible to remain clueless as to how plants even grow and do what they do and turn into food. If you want to, you can remain clueless about that and simply just enjoy the experience of eating them when you go to Hy-Vee. But Mother Nature can only take this kind of behavior for so long. The way we grow and transport food today is unsustainable and a huge threat to the environment and our survival. So how did it come to this? How did we get here so far from our roots and the ancient knowledge of generations of our ancestors who taught us about the interdependent web of life? No doubt the issue is complex and large and beyond what we can get into in a 20-minute sermon, but for some insight into it, let us turn to Charles Darwin's theory of natural selection. Natural selection was the theory based on his monumental work on the origin of species, which Darwin published in 1859. And we have come to understand natural selection in terms of competition, right? We all learned about it in school. How many of you learned about natural selection in school? So did you learn what I did, which was that survival of the fittest explains our world as a world of cutthroat competition? That's kind of what I remember from science class. So yeah, folks are nodding, waving. And when we have that idea that competition is the nature of the universe, it tells us that everything, everyone, is in competition for survival. Everyone is out for themselves. And when you think about it this way, it is easy to see how evolution became sort of known to be in favor of selfishness. And boy, was the business world quick to latch onto this idea of selfishness. And so here we are, acting selfishly, consuming in ways that benefit humans, benefit us, not the other plants, not the other creatures, and using the earth rather than honoring her. But you know, we're just trying to survive after all, says the theory. Now, before I go on any further, let me be clear that I do not and I will not ever judge people for what they eat or don't eat. I don't care where you shop or where you don't shop, what you consume or don't consume. I'm not interested in policing people's choices about what they eat. That's not interesting to me. That kind of judgment is the wrong spirit for the creative change and compassion we're going to need in order to survive this. What I am interested in is the sacred story we tell ourselves. The sacred story we tell ourselves about who we are as a people and what we need to do to continue to survive and thrive. And I'm wondering if we can possibly learn to tell ourselves a new story about the nature of humanity, the nature of species. I'm wondering if we can birth something new. So it turns out the story that many of us learned in high school science class on the survival of the fittest is actually false. It is an evolution myth. Charles Darwin didn't even coin the phrase survival of the fittest. That honor goes to Herbert Spencer, a 19th century English philosopher. Spencer coined the phrase Survival of the Fittest in his book, Principles of Biology, which he published in 1864, fully 5 years after Darwin's On the Origin of Species. And Spencer was attempting to merge this concept of Darwin's natural selection with his own economic theories. From there, the concept got widely misunderstood and misused. For starters, says Michael LePage in The New Scientist, there is a lot more to evolution by natural selection than just survival of the fittest. There must also be a population of replicating entities and variations between them that affect fitness, variations that must be inheritable. By itself, survival of the fittest is a dead end. So we see that the concept is not accurate to start with. And then things got really pretty ugly when Thomas Henry Huxley applied it to the social sciences in the 1860s. Huxley is known for coining the term and dangerous concept of social Darwinism. And social Darwinism has been claimed to justify all kinds of things, from free markets to eugenics. Some notions still have a powerful grip in some circles today, but none of that was what Darwin was talking about. It never was survival of the fittest. It's not what he meant. Life on Earth, from the very beginning, is not about competition. It's about coming together. The first single-celled organisms, after all, eventually evolved into multi-celled organisms with the cells working together. From multi-celled organisms, somehow we got to complex organisms with all of those systems working together. And then we got to social organisms like bees and ants who miraculously are separate complex life forms that function as one system together. At each step in the evolutionary process, there was some kind of coming together moment. There was some moment of new cooperation that was different than it ever had been. And so we see that evolution is not about fighting and competition, but about a constant evolutionary pattern of small parts coming together to form larger wholes. And as people, as human beings, we've made a similar transition on our evolutionary journey to today. People have come together again and again in different ways across the millennium for mutual benefit. Cooperation, not competition, is the key to survival. Darwin actually published another important publication in 1871, far lesser known, called The Descent of Man. And in this book, he argues that the human species has succeeded not because of strength or competition, but because of traits like sharing and compassion. Darwin says in this work, those communities which included the greatest number of the most sympathetic members would flourish best and rear the greatest number of offspring. Did you hear that? He said sympathetic creatures. Sympathy, kindness, compassion, love, cooperation. These are the reasons why Darwin believed humans have survived for so long. As it turns out, if we look at just a simple word count of what he was discussing in The Descent of Man, we find this. Darwin wrote in that piece 95 times about love. Of moral sensitivity, he wrote 92 times. Of cooperation, called mutual aid in Darwin's time, he wrote 27 times. And of competition, he wrote 12 times. For Darwin, the prime driver for human evolution and completion of his theory is our capacity for the moral sense. Natural selection never was about being the strongest or most aggressive. It was about a number of other things, like perhaps being the most loving, adaptive, altruistic, clever, and of course, cooperative. It is about that ancient wisdom of interdependence we heard about today in the story of the three sisters. Native American writer and botanist Robin Wall Kimmerer describes the story of the three sisters as a new metaphor for an emerging relationship between indigenous knowledge and Western science, both of which are rooted in the earth. Her three sisters' garden, which she grows based on ancient knowledge of cooperation and companion planting, is central to her way of life. She tells us about it in her book, Braiding Sweetgrass, and she tells us that every summer in August, when you will find the three sisters in abundance, she hosts a three sisters dinner, a huge potluck, and everybody in town comes with their unique variety of corn, beans, and squash, everything you can think of doing with those three items, and they have a feast to honor the three sisters. She tells us this. They've all brought their gifts to the table, but they've not done it alone. The three sisters remind us that there is another partner in the symbiosis. She's sitting here at the table, and across the valley in the farmhouse, too. She's the one who noticed the ways of each species and imagined how they might live together. Perhaps we should consider this a four sisters' garden. For the planter is also essential. The planter is an essential partner. It is she who turns up the soil, she who scares away the crows, and she who pushes seeds into the soil. We are planters, the ones who clear the land, pull the weeds, pick the bugs. We save the seeds over winter and plant them again next spring. We are the midwives of their gifts. We cannot live without them, but it's also true that they cannot live without us. Corn, beans, and squash are fully domesticated. They rely on us to create the conditions under which they can grow. We, too, are part of the reciprocity. They can't meet their responsibilities unless we meet ours. And so Kimmerer reminds us that we're not separate from nature. We're not in competition with nature. We are part of it, responsible for our part in the flourishing of creation. We are of the earth. We are in relationship with all that is, and we have a role to play. So I began earlier by pointing out what is probably obvious to most of us, that our way of life is destroying the earth. In fact, with climate change, we are facing a possible sixth great extinction on earth. But there is a way forward. If we return to right relationship with the earth. We've come this far by evolution, by working together, by evolving, by in each new moment birthing something new that didn't exist before, by creating new life, new ways of being. And so we have to do it again. We have to evolve. If we listen, if we remember, we can recall rich and ancient knowledge from our ancestors on how to cooperate and thrive on this planet. And we can use science to support our quest to survive and save us and our planet. We can meet this challenge in front of us. We have what we need to adapt and change. We can write a new sacred story. But it's not going to happen for us. This is not a time to turn away from the issue or to take a rest. This is a time to be creative. This is a time to act. We are at what environmental activist and author Joanna Macy calls the great turning, a collective transition from a society based on competition and hierarchy to a life-sustaining society based on cooperation. We are facing this, and we can do it. As we make this collective transition, we each have a part to play. And Joanna Macy simply asks us to consider this. What is happening through me? How is the great turning happening through me? How am I a part of the solution? We each have the capacity to make choices and decisions of influence. As a part of the interdependent web of life, we have power beyond measure that we too often forget about. What affects one of us affects all of us and the whole. So it follows that we can contribute to the well-being of the whole by making faithful choices every day based on love and compassion, not competition and scarcity. So ask yourself, as Macy suggests, how can the great turning happen through me? How can I embrace the power I have to make compassionate choices and make a difference? How can I invite a different story? How can I birth a new story and let it flow through me and create and heal the world? Gentle people, I wonder, what story are we telling ourselves today? What story is flowing through us and out into the world? What story is creating our future? And I wonder if we can leave that old, misconstrued story of competition behind and take up the real, wonderful story of cooperation and compassion. Can we live into a story of right relationship with the earth and connectedness with all that is? Can we be the fourth sister to a world that values us as part of the interdependent web and needs us to do our part? Corn, beans, squash, humans, all working together for mutual benefit. I believe with enough creativity and compassion, we can widen our self-interest and act for the well-being of all. We can right our relationship with creation. We only have to remember the ancient ways, use them along with the modern gifts of science and technology, get creative, and write a new sacred story. A new story. A new story that will remind us of who we are and always have been, people capable of evolving, adapting, growing, changing, and thriving if we but listen to the earth. A new story that will guide us forward into a sustainable future beyond the great turning, which is the moment we are in. So I invite you to turn together towards a brighter day. May this be so. Amen, and blessed be.